You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, you are. Good morning to you. Mike McNamara for our Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. And going to play a little audio from the Commandant. If you haven't seen that, you need to hear it. And if you haven't seen that, you need to hear it. If you haven't heard that, you need to hear it. And so we'll do that. Jarvis Lynch, Major General, United States Marine Corps, going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on this whole social media controversy. And I guess as I laid in bed this morning and thought about this and read some stuff online, what's the problem? What's the problem? What is there a new problem here? And here's what I'm concluding. There is not a new problem here. Okay? If anything, it's the same problem that we've had for a long time, and it continues to rear its head. So, I would tell you that, all right, so it's all over the media and it looks shitty, okay? But what's the problem? The problem is an organization that currently, today, is 94% male. That problem, that organization struggles with accepting, treating equally females. Okay, we know that because we're a part of it on a daily basis. It's a macho event. Okay, especially if you work in the combat arms. It's why guys join. It's what appeals to them. Yada, yada, yada. All right, so that group has problems accepting, identifying with, being sympathetic towards things female. All right, so we undergo sensitivity training. So we all do that. Okay. And the vast majority of Marines, not the vast majority, 99% of Marines do this. Do well with it. And I'll tell you what, the guys I talk to on active duty, regardless of their personal opinion about women in infantry and things like that, you know what they say? Hey, look, we're implementing it. So we'll see how it works. You know, they have to be up to it, and we're implementing it. The Commandant told us to march on, so we're marching on. And that's guys who are adamantly opposed to it, okay? But that's their attitude now. So we have idiots among us. That's the story. Okay? That's not a new story. All right. So, with that said, retired Major General Jarvis Lynch is going to join us. You know, the other part is our culture changes. What's acceptable has changed. And in many cases, the standard, gets lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. Okay? Mike Musselman's raised the issue. Who's to blame here? You know, you launch naked pictures of yourself. Now, that's victim blaming, right? That's victim blaming. We know that. How about the guy who forwards that and the guy who doesn't do anything to stop it? How about those guys? That's not exactly the image that the Marine Corps wants to portray. So, having said that, General Lynch is going to join us this morning. We're going to talk to him about this kind of stuff. So that'll be interesting. And then we'll also be joined by, and it's just a coincidence, his son Tim is going to join us as well. And Tim is going to be an All Marine Radio correspondent, headed back to Helmand. He does a blog called Free Range International. And so Tim is a retired major in the Marine Corps, and he's headed back to, with, I think they're calling it Task Force Southwest, Marines headed back to Helmand Valley. And so we'll talk to him this morning about that as well. So, yeah, father and son combination. first time that's happened on this program. So before I play the national anthem, I want to play the Commandant. Or maybe I'll wait for General Lynch. No, it's important that you hear it. Maybe I'll play it again. So this is General Neller addressing online behavior.
Marines, General Neller here. These last 18 months, I've spent a lot of time talking to you about how we as Marines must treat each other as members of this warfighting organization with dignity and respect. I've spoken about the effort it takes to earn the title Marine, and our families in the nation are proud of who we are and have high expectations of our professionalism and competence. That our Corps does not care where you come from, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're a man or woman, what your sexual preference may be, only that you have the discipline, drive, and commitment to be a U.S. Marine. That when we make the team, we're all teammates, brothers and sisters, Marines. That we are seen by our fellow citizens as men and women of honor and virtue, possessing an unbreakable commitment to each other and to the nation. Unfortunately, it appears that some Marines may have forgotten these fundamental truths and instead have acted selfishly and unprofessionally through their actions on social media. So let me cut to the chase. When I hear allegations of Marines denigrating their fellow Marines, I don't think such behavior is that of true warriors or warfighters. As warriors, we all know that cohesion and trust within a unit and between Marines is vital to success on the battlefield. Right now, we all need to be focused on getting better, becoming more lethal, working day and night to stay ahead of potential adversaries, getting ready for the fight today and the one ahead. Not hiding on social media, participating in, or being aware of actions that are disrespectful and harmful to other Marines. It's embarrassing to our Corps, to our families, and to the nation. Now, the only way we have ever solved any problem our Corps has faced is to confront it head on. So if you believe you are a victim of any harassment or abuse via social media or otherwise, I would ask you to report it to your chain of command, your chaplain, or a victim legal counsel. For our NCOs and staff NCOs, I expect that you will support all Marines who report behavior that is prejudicial to good order and discipline, including conduct that is degrading to Marines. Ensure they are protected from any form of retaliation, and do all in your power to prevent harassment or abuse of any Marine or sailor. For officers, as senior leaders, we will ensure all in our charge understand the rules and regulations on social media, conduct, harassment, and abuse, and that they clearly understand its negative impact on good order and discipline. We will ensure that the investigative process that is ongoing supports the reporting of conduct like this. If changes need to be made, they will be made. Our legacy is as one of the finest fighting forces the world has known, and I know that the vast majority of Marines take this profession of arms, this calling, seriously and work hard every day to build on that legacy. You train, you lead, you mentor your fellow Marines to become better warfighters every day. And to you I say, continue to march. I'm proud of you, and I will proudly go to war with you tonight. What we say and do each day represents who we are, and there is no time off for Marines. We are all in 24/7. And if that commitment to your excellence interferes with your me time, or if you can or are unwilling to commit to contributing 100% to our Corps' warfighting ability by being a good teammate and improving cohesion and trust, then I have to ask you, do you really want to be a Marine? We will get through this if we are all in together, treating your fellow Marines with the respect they deserve. I need all to be a Marine, to do your job. We will all need each other in the days ahead.
It's the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Robert Neller. Moderately pissed when he's doing it too. And that's one take, by the way. There's no editing and fading in and out. I wonder how many times it took him to do that. That's him in his own words. Good morning to you. motivation.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
After 7 o'clock here. A little bit late. Let me check the weather real quick. Then we'll get Jarvis Lynch, Major General type, on the phone. And we'll talk to him about all this. Let me just tell you, the more, you know, first when you see this, you're like, bah! You know, and let me make a prediction. The bottom line, it's going to be a relatively small number of Marines, current and former or whatever. They're behaving like idiots. And so they should be crushed. They should be punished. Everybody's got enough education. We've done all the classes. People know. And so what's left to be done is for people to pay. And there isn't more you can do in terms of sensitivity training. You know, we've done all that. And so what's the missing piece? The missing piece is lay the wood to their ass. Make them an example. And let people know you'll be held accountable. You know, the UCMJ is not about your rights. It's about good order and discipline in the military. So to me, it's 94% male. Okay. It's a macho fest. Okay. Trying to make room for women, trying to accept them, all of that, which is a struggle. Not going to lie to you. Okay. But I think the Marine Corps, you know, made great strides. Is it perfect? No. Right? Is there a great debate that whether women belong in combat arms? Yes. But I haven't met anyone who says, hey, look, Commandant said to go, and so we're going. You know, and so, anyway, so that's the context this argument takes place. I'm not too excited about it, to be honest with you, because again, it's what it will be at the end of the day will be a small number of idiots that were being idiots. And of that small number, some, you know, will have joined and didn't participate, and there'll be a small number of a small number that participated actively. So that's just my opinion after seeing things like this before. And after you peel the onion, and here's what you got. All right, what do you got for weather? Sunny and 57 in Quantico. Mostly cloudy and 68 at Camp Lejeune. It's cooled off a little bit in Texas. It's mostly cloudy and 53 in Granbury. Up in North Dakota, it's warmed up. It's 13 above zero under cloudy skies. 29 Palms, sunny and 53. A little bit warmer. Camp Pendleton, mostly cloudy and 47. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy and 70. Okinawa, dark, cloudy and 59. Fallujah report 71. Clear skies with the sun just about to go down. And at the home of all, Almarine Radio, 51 degrees under mostly cloudy skies in Southern California, heading into the 70s today. This hour of Almarine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, the home of the Battle Mug itself. Starts as a 10.5-pound block of T6 billet aluminum. After it's milled, machined, and anodized, you have a pretty cool product. Each mug is serialized and built with the operator in mind, with Picatinny rails that you can mount just about anything that you can put on your rifle onto your battle mug. It's a perfect gift for any commemorative event, farewells, promotions, retirements, anniversaries, birthdays, going aways, you name it, Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, or any other special occasion. Check them out at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug's a veteran-owned and operated company, and the product's made entirely in the United States of America. All right, with all that said, Jarvis Lynch going to join us next, and we're going to talk about this controversy, its backdrop, the cultural challenges that all the service branches face, in particular the Marine Corps. So don't go away. Almarine Radio on a Wednesday, next.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of Almarine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. The past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. So, 728 here on the west coast of the United States. Privileged to be joined again by Jarvis Lynch, Major General, United States Marine Corps, retired. And, sir, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Just fine, man. And you?
I've got no issues this morning so far, so I'm all right as well. Let's can we do just to reintroduce you to everybody? Born and raised where?
In the South Jersey, Glassboro, New Jersey.
All right, and joined the Marine Corps via the United States Naval Academy in what year?
1956.
And so your career sees you fight in Vietnam and where else?
Just Vietnam. And I went there twice, the first time for a very short period, to look at the Marine Corps helicopter squadron at Da Nang. They were concerned about the security of the place. I was sent down from Okinawa at the time, and they were absolutely correct. So we sent some people down to bulk up their security, and then a full tour, 68-69, as a operations officer of a Marine Infantry Battalion, which became reinforced and was a battalion landing team, and we conducted some amphibious operations.
Now, I've had you on in the past, and we've discussed some of the guys that you worked with. You had the privilege, just so everybody hears these things, General Barrow, I think at the time, Colonel Barrow, he was your regimental commander?
He was commanding officer of 9th Marines, and we were placed under his operational control for a period of time.
Okay.
In the fall of 68.
And then another Marine Corps legend, General Ray Davies. He was your division commander at the time?
He was the division commander while we worked for 3rd Marine Division, yes.
You know, I tell that story that you told to me that after I think the your battalion went into LZ Margo, that he landed the next day and you told him, What, you didn't think it was safe for him to be there? And he said, son, this is my AO. I'll go anywhere I want to.
Yeah. That was the demilitarized zone, the DMZ.
Right.
And, and we had his helicopter landed, and he was walking down this road that the North Vietnamese Army had carved under the trees, and he was escorted by an aide wearing a .45 caliber pistol and two lieutenant colonels, each armed with a camera. And we had people killed on that road the previous night by enemy artillery. Yes, and I told him I didn't think it was very safe, and he in effect told me that it was his division, his area, and he'd go anywhere he wanted to go. And I conceded that he was probably correct.
Yeah. It shows you had good judgment as a major. What your major commands that you commanded, sir, just so people know?
Oh, 2nd Force Service Support Group, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and Marine Corps Recruit Depot, and the Eastern Recruiting Region at Parris Island, South Carolina.
Okay. I wanted to have you on this morning because you're a friend of the show. You're a general officer with lots of experience in the Marine Corps. This is not this Marines United thing that's going on. It's not the first challenge that the Marine Corps has faced like this. In terms of crisis response to these things or the actions that the institution takes, give me your thoughts about how the Marine Corps handles these things when they do it well, and how they handle it, and what they do when they handle it poorly.
Well, the first handling poorly, which has happened on occasion, unfortunately, is instant overreaction. Everybody's guilty, and we're going to take swift and violent action, etc. That sort of thing. It doesn't happen. It hasn't happened very often, but it has happened. Reacting properly is first expressing disquietude with the situation, and then waiting until all the information is collected and they know exactly what they're dealing with, and then know exactly what action to take.
Disquietude. Can you define that for those of us who aren't as literate as you South Jersey people?
Disquietude, disappointment. We're not happy with this. Obviously, it's not the way we are. It's not the way we want to be. It's not the way we're going to be, and we'll get it fixed. But first, we have to find out what's really going on.
Okay, and that's where we're at. Where it's almost, to me, it's akin to the first stages of a firefight, in which if you close your eyes and put your hands in front of you and kind of act like you're feeling for an edge or feeling for something out in front of you, it's that phase of that sequence in which you don't really know what's out there. You're trying to get your hands on it, but in order for you to react, You got to know what's there, and you don't really know what's there yet, and so it's tough to react. Yet, and again, I'll draw on your experiences at Parris Island, well, and FSSG, because you come from the same pipeline that I came through, which is when you're an infantry officer, and that's your career, you didn't often serve with women, correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. What was the first command that you were ever in with women?
Well, in no great numbers. The first time was I was a lieutenant, and I was the assistant officer selection officer in Los Angeles, and there was a woman officer in the district headquarters in San Francisco. I used to go with us sometimes on college campuses to recruit women officers. That's the first real encounter I had with any women Marines at all.
What was the first time you served with them in any number?
Any number would have been Second Force Service Support Group when I was the commanding general there.
So not until you were a major general,
is correct. I also commanded the 8th Marine Corps District when I was a colonel, and we had women Marines in, I believe, each of the recruiting. Well, I had 10 recruiting stations, and we had maybe two or so women Marines in each of them, but that would have been anything more than, I don't know, probably no more than 40. I never counted that. I don't know.
But
they were in number in the Second Force Service Support Group. And I've forgotten how many now. But it was, I want to say call it 500, but I'm not sure that that's right.
All right.
But well, it was up in the hundreds.
Okay, we won't. The fact that you don't recall your morning report is not something we'll hold against you today. So, the but again, my point is it illustrates that when you made your living in the combat arms, you served most of your career in the absence of any females. It's a male, and so I guess one of the challenges that the Marine Corps has faced constantly. Is as a, even today, 94% male organization, and of all the services, I think sees itself as the most aggressive, the toughest, the roughest. So it appeals to a certain type of even not all guys want to serve in the Marine Corps, and then into that environment now. The challenge has always been relative to female Marines to sensitize male Marines to act with respect towards female Marines. Talk to us about that challenge, and then after you address the challenge, I want you to talk about how that's changed over time, because certainly our culture's changed. What young people come to the Marine Corps with has changed, and that presents new challenges in ways that we, you know, never ever anticipated probably, you know, years ago. So that challenge in a macho organization as a commanding general, and again, you commanded Parris Island, which trained the female recruits. I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Oh, boy. Well, the first thought that comes to my mind when you ask that question, I was thinking rapidly when you asked that question because it really never occurred to me. I don't recall as a younger officer ever having been required to think about teaching them male Marines for respect for female Marines. It was just a given. And even when we had, or when I commanded the Second Force Service Support Group, that issue never really came up. The women... the only time that it came up, I'll put it this way, the only time that it came up, now that I think about it, was with, I forgot the name of the organization, it was Fuel, it had to do with Fuel, and
Fuel?
It was an organization that had pipelines, and for some reason or other, Headquarters Marine Corps had sent a lot of young female Marines to the Second Force Service Support Group with the military occupational specialty of this fuel company, Bulk Fuel Company.
Right.
And the problem, and the only problem that occurred was when they moved pipe, if there was a woman involved in moving the pipe, you had to put a male Marine there, and you'd have to have two male Marines. I forgot what the ratio was, but you had to put more male Marines on there. It just didn't make sense
right.
to have that many women in that company because they couldn't do the heavy lifting that was required. And I remember calling headquarters Marine Corps about it.
The only time you dealt with gender issue as a
gender issue like that. Yes. I had no problem ever came to me about and I would ask sometimes. And I remember one company, Electronic Maintenance Company.
Elmaco.
They loved to have the female Marines because they did a better job at maintaining the equipment, the tender parts, the small parts of a lot of the equipment. They were just better at it because their hands were better. And they were just most proud of them and all that sort of thing. The bulk fuel was the only one that I can remember ever coming to me.
Talk about the experience at Parris Island. Certainly involved in a much different way. With the whole issue of not women, but the way male Marines related to female Marines. Ever an issue on the island?
No. Obviously, they were separated with the 4th Battalion, their training facility, they were all-in-one battalion, and it was a recruit command, a recruit training command within a larger recruit training command. They had all separate facilities, et cetera, and there was no contact. And I would go to Mass on Sundays, and that's when there were males and females in the same place at the same time, recruits.
Right.
Same place, same time. But also in the same place at the same time were female and male drill instructors. And they made very certain that there was no contact between male and female recruits. And that's not to say there weren't attempts made by on the parts of recruits, but these were normal. What would I say? Male female attempts at meeting each other.
Right.
But there was nothing serious about it, and there was at Parris Island, the male recruits did exactly what those male drill instructors said, that and no more. And one of the things that they were taught was, it's yes ma'am and no ma'am, and if they did have to talk to or encounter a female drill instructor, which I suppose would happen on occasion, but I did not have the kind of things. Whatever this current problem is, we didn't have anything like that. If we did have it, nobody told me.
Okay, fair enough.
I had a sergeant major who was always very good because it was his job. He'd get right inside of what's going on and keep me informed.
And it's interesting because you would have. So, what about at the FSSG? When you commanded it? Was harassment not a problem in terms of female Marines?
If it was, I was not told, and if I was not told, shame on them, because it would have come to a halt very quickly.
Okay, I'm curious about your thoughts. Our culture's changed greatly. And the Marine Corps always, not the Marine Corps, any institution, I think chases the cultural changes. Your thoughts on that? The challenges of managing an institution as our culture changes, as maybe the bar is lowered on behavior in the general culture and things that we wouldn't find acceptable are now what young people come into the Marine Corps just as part of their lives. Your thoughts about that?
the culture, the societal culture of the United States has been and is on a downhill slide. And we are sliding toward becoming a secular nation, a standardless society, and I've used that term for now a good decade, a standardless society. We lack the standards. We lack the touch with religion that used to exist. Example, well, I could get any number, and it starts in Washington. It's there. Look at the behavior of these people. Look at the lies that have been fed to the American public over the years. And they're not punished. They're not even recognized as lies. And if they are recognized by somebody as lies, why somebody else is going to say, but they all lie. What difference does it make? And this has seeped into society at large. Two days ago, I received a mail. I get about 3-4 mail-outs every day, and every one of them is citing a problem, and every one of them, the problem citer wants money and my backing and my help, and I'm sure that I'm no different than most others. But 3 or 4 times a day, people asking for money to square something away, and usually what they're asking the money for is a societal problem, or a moral problem, if you will, a problem of integrity. But the other day I get one, and the author wanted money, and B, wanted me to fill out a survey, because they all have a survey with them. The questions aren't too hard to answer, right, to say the least. And what they're trying to do is put chaplains back in business in the military. Well, I never knew the chaplains were out of business in the military. Now, I'm paraphrasing now. That's not what they said. They want the chaplains to be able to cite Christ in their prayers, which is staggering when you think about it. But faith and action. I'm looking at it now. Religious rights in the U.S. military are so needed, and I should have pulled this thing out before, but in any event, talking about America has a new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, a man whom I've met and have high respect for. Right. There reports that he is a fervent Christian, which I'm sure that he is, and they want me to fill out this questionnaire, send it back, and it encourages General Dunford to take action. Chaplains have been run out of the U.S. military because they want to pray in Christ's name. Should all Christian chaplains have their right to pray in Jesus' name restored? Well, who the hell took it away? What kind of world are we living in? Recently uncovered official Pentagon briefing papers show the Pentagon blasting the Holy Bible as sexist, in a document about sexism. Should this anti-Bible policy be reversed? Well, who put it in the first place? These kinds of things are this is unheard of to me.
Right.
And, of course, I've been retired now for over 2 decades. A chaplain for a Ranger training battalion was punished after one soldier complained. One soldier complained that he advocated Christianity and used the Bible at a suicide prevention training session. Should this and all punishment of Christian chaplains be reversed? My God. Should the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, make it a top priority to restore the religious rights of all our military men and women? Who took them away? What are they talking about? This is a society in steep decline, and I don't care what anybody thinks. It's in steep decline, and it's got to stop. I don't know how you stop it, and I don't think it's incumbent upon the military services to do what they can to counteract these things. But it's not incumbent upon the military services to serve as the corrective body for problems that are caused from outside by people outside the military services. So. That's my opinion for what it's worth.
All right. I'm sure when these kind of issues first surfaced, young people are, I don't think young people are surprised by them because, you read about these kind of things going on in our culture all the time. Whether it's celebrities have pictures taken off their hat and taken, this thing called revenge porn, where an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend publishes pictures of somebody. I mean, so it's a part of our culture. The fact that it gets into the Marine Corps, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but I think we still are. I don't know if you've seen the video that General Neller did. He talks about, honor, courage, and commitment, living up to that. If that's not a part of your life, then, you don't belong. But it seems to be a constant fight, for any institution, as the social norms change, and it seems like, as the bottom falls out, that we continue to try to raise that platform and to bring young people into the military and say, no, that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll look at you and say, what do you mean? Like, well, what's wrong with it? It's like, are you kidding me? This is not how you do it. And so it just seems to me that the Marine Corps is taking its face shots for this, and it's being linked to this culture of in the Marine Corps that doesn't accept women.
And that culture is not Marine Corps only, if it is in the Marine Corps. And I would question just how deeply it is in the Marine Corps. But cultures within the Marine Corps don't exist if they didn't come from somewhere outside the Marine Corps. They brought them in with them when they came in the Marine Corps. Otherwise, why would the Marine Corps have changed the way it has? The leadership, I don't think their attitudes have changed toward the sexual harassment any more than mine were. We're all the same. I think they come from outside, and I think they got to be. What I fear is going to happen is, the Congress is going to get upset, and members of the Congress are just going to be screeching as they usually are, whining and sniveling about something, and they are the ones who are the purveyors of much of this to begin with. It comes from civilian leadership. And civilian educators or whatever. The society is going downhill. My bellwether is hit and run accidents, if you can believe that. When I was a kid, if there was a hit and run with an automobile, that was a big deal. And the police went crazy until they could find the hit and run driver and prosecute him. Now hit and run every day. I read them every day in the newspaper. It's not a big deal anymore. Yesterday, 16-year-old girl that walking to the bus stop to go to high school. Boom. She gets hit and killed and the guy drives off. Now they're looking for the guy. And you won't hear about it again because they probably won't find him. But I just think our societal behavior is on a downhill slide. And my opinion is this is coming from the deliberate attempts on parts of society to take the country away from its religious foundations, the Christian Judeo principles upon which the country was founded. I didn't mean to interrupt. I should keep quiet.
No, this is not. We're so far from our Judeo-Christian, and so young people today, when you begin to talk about our Judeo-Christian values, I think they almost look at it like, well, that's a bad thing, right? Because, you know, you can't have the Ten Commandments at the courthouse, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you can't have any, you know, that's like, that's not a good thing, right?
That's correct.
Right, and so the entire way the nation was founded, the belief system on which the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all those things that really form the infrastructure of the nation are founded upon, somehow or other, you know, that's not something that we embrace anymore.
No.
And as you said, sir, a secular nation, that's the field on which the institution now plays in the secular nation, where you come and the only thing that's important is how much you can get, how much fun you can have, and what is in it for me, which is pretty fundamentally different from the culture that you got raised in.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Definitely is. I was also, a lot of my upbringing was during World War II. And you had a nation very much aware of God and the Bible and prayer during World War II. I can guarantee you that one. But anyway,
And you know, the nation's not going to turn back to those values. Let me ask you this: what becomes of the nation?
Oh, I don't know. I do not know. I do believe that if and when it gets so bad, so far downhill that God becomes disgusted with it, He will turn the nation back to Himself, or He will let it go, one or the other. But remember, even in my lifetime, what has happened, what happened to Nazi Germany when its back was turned on religion. And there were religious people. I'm not saying that. In Germany, there were people who believed in God.
Right.
But there were a whole lot more people who didn't, and they were punished severely. You'd get punished if it continues. But
let me read you an email, sir.
Yeah.
Hey Mac, can you imagine if you walked into a meeting and started talking about Judeo-Christian values today? You would be laughed. You would be told, yeah. Okay, we need to back away from that. It would not even be entertained. And the email goes on. I'm not sure about the chaplains. I certainly know that their role is less prominent until you go to combat. And then the chaplain becomes a major player again.
How about that? Isn't that something?
Kind of interesting phenomenon that we all observe, and then we come back home, and that role is continued in terms of a big part of it, because we need the chaplain to deal with the things that we see. Our families need the chaplain as they deal with us, and so I think it's an interesting phenomenon, but I dare say that if you talk about values in any type of group setting, you're going to see the eyes roll and you're going to quickly be told to back away from that discussion that we're talking about business here. So it's to your point of us being a secular nation.
Yep. And they didn't, those attitudes came with them when they came into the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps didn't breed those attitudes into them, in my opinion.
Right. So what should be expected? So the Marine Corps should be judged on, one, what it does when it's notified, because it can't monitor social media. It can only respond when something is brought to its attention. So the Marine Corps, I'm not trying to defend the Marine Corps, but so the institutions, you judge them based on what they do when this is brought to their attention, and then their ongoing endeavor to raise the bar, to raise the ethical bar, to imbue morals into a culture that has less and less each year. Is that the struggle?
That's what it is. That's the only thing I can think of. It's that and by example. There are probably actions that can be taken, but it's so difficult a problem to deal with.
Well, because it's rooted in our society. To me, it's the Marines that I've spoken, I mentioned this at the start of the show, but the Marines I've spoken to, even with, you know, the whole concept of women in the infantry and the combat arms, they said, hey, look, that ship has sailed, man. We Commandant said, drive on, we're driving on. If and when they come to us, well, we will certainly accommodate them. We will treat them as Marines, and we're over that. We'll see what happens, I guess. And they've accepted it, and no matter what their feeling was before and about it. And so, and certainly my own sense of the things that my friends tell me is that, hey, nobody's going to certainly hold anything against the female Marines that are going to attempt that. You know, all the more power to them. And we have a certain amount of, huge amount of respect for them for even giving it a shot, because it's not easy. Physically, it's not easy for guys. And certainly not going to be easy for women. And so to take that kind of a challenge takes a bit of moxie, and how can you not respect that as a Marine? You certainly do. It's not easy, you know, in terms of this social piece, which seems to come with them into the Marine Corps, and then anything is okay. And where's the guy who stands up? Just disturbing. And I'll broaden the conversation. I interviewed a senator for another program I do yesterday. He's a former senator from the state of North Dakota named Byron Dorgan. And he said, you know, Mac, the atmosphere that we live in now is one in which you cannot compromise. Because if you compromise as an elected member of either the House or the Senate, you will face you'll face a challenger in a primary who's going to accuse you of selling the party out.
Mm-hmm.
He said that's simply a fact. He said compromise is the lubricant of democracy. It's the way it works. But you can't do it anymore lest you be called a sellout, and, you know, again, you're going to face a challenger in your own party's primary. He said that's not good as a politician.
He said,
and that's the world that we live in. Anyway, well, sir, first of all, I feel the pain in your voice, though, relative to this discussion.
Yeah, and. But another thing that bothers me is these females in infantry and reconnaissance and even artillery and all that. I don't know what the hell they think they're going to accomplish. I don't know what happens when we next go to war and it's in a jungle in a very hot environment, something of that nature. I can assure you that I've never known a woman who could have done what that battalion did in Vietnam. Day in, day out, week in, week out, dressed in rags, underfed, stink. We smelled so bad that every time people came out, the generals would come out, or colonel, or the regimental commander, somebody would come out, and, you know, they maneuver around to get upwind of you and all that, jungle rot, all the things that come with that kind of stuff, and you tell me that women are going to serve there.
No, you know
what? They're going to be productive, and they're going to be of assistance, and I'm telling you, they're not going to be. They're going to be a problem, and they're going to become a bigger problem than anybody would have ever thought.
You know, sir, I think there's a lot of Marines that absolutely agree with you, but now their position is, hey, look, that ship has sailed on me. You know, the Marine Corps did a study that the Secretary of Navy didn't even look at.
Yeah, he was an idiot.
But that's,
that guy's an idiot.
But that's the leadership, and certainly nobody in Congress is interested in that. They live in their own world where you can't compromise, right? And so not only can you not compromise, is a congressman going to say, well, you know, logic dictates then that women ought to, you know, if they're going to be equal, women ought to be, you know, they ought to register for the draft, and they ought to be, you know, they ought to poll, everybody ought to poll. And so that issue comes up, and then it's like, oh, hell no. How is that polling back in the district? Oh, that's 90 to 10. Women do not want to register for the draft. Well, how do you parse it? You can't a la carte this thing, can you? Hey, look, this is politics, man. We can a la carte anything we want to. We'll simply derail it. No, women will not be required. Well, how does that make sense? It doesn't make sense, but that's what the way the vote is.
That's right. Yeah. Did you know that in Nazi Germany, near the end of the war, there were still some draft eligible or military service eligible males left in the German population, and in order to motivate those males to join the military, they instituted a draft instituted this program whereby females would be allowed to volunteer for service in the infantry, etc., and join the Wehrmacht.
What?
Yes, that was instituted in Nazi Germany at probably starting in early 1945. And the program to motivate males to join the military, to serve in the infantry, by having females do so, the program failed because the females of Nazi Germany, having been bombed, etc., were smart enough to understand what combat really means. And he didn't volunteer to join the infantry. And the program died.
I've never heard of it.
I read about it.
Never heard of it.
I read about it. Yeah.
All right.
See, my example, women, if being bombed is in combat, and I think that it is, millions of women in World War II were combat veterans, bombed out of their homes, children killed in bombs, all this sort of thing. They understood all that. They can take that. What they can't take is the physical action involved with infantry or artillery. I remember one night in Vietnam, an artillery battery worked for us all night long. a 155 battery. And the next morning, I radioed back to that battery. I wanted to thank the battery commander. And the radio operator on the other end at the battery said, "Sir," he said, "the officers are all asleep now." He said, "They were serving the guns last night because we don't have enough people to serve the guns 24 hours, you know?"
Right.
And well, supposedly you get yourself an artillery battery that needs officers to serve the guns. That 155 RD battery. Tell me how that one's going to work out.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. You know, so it's just,
and we were, by the way, I don't need to be melodramatic about it, but we tried close air, but the pilots couldn't deliver the ordnance, wouldn't deliver the ordnance, and I didn't blame them because they didn't think we knew where we were. And what was disturbing the pilots, it was the squadron commander. He identified himself to me as the squadron commander, as a 6, Umdifrat 6. I don't know what basic call sign was now, but anyway, he said, "Do you realize you're surrounded?" I said, "No, I didn't know that. That's very interesting." And he said, "You got to understand, every time we start rolling in," he said, "we got red flares coming around in a big circle." I said, "Well, can't you bomb the flares? Why should you square up to them?" But he said, "If we dropped ordnance and we got any of your guys," he said, I couldn't live with myself. I said, you're right. I asked too much. Vaya con Dios. And come back tomorrow. Maybe we'll have something for you tomorrow. But anyway.
Vaya con Dios. Go with God.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, sir, certainly an interesting conversation. You know, the things that you talk about, us becoming a secular society, things that are acceptable now that you never dealt with. And I have an email for you, and then I'll let you go. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. Does General Lynch believe that those problems weren't resident in the FSSG that he commanded, or does he believe that they simply weren't reported? Sir, what's your sense of that? I mean,
I would be a fool to say there wasn't some of that, because there probably was, and it was not reported to me. It never got out into the chain of command. But whatever there was has no bearing on what goes on, this incident with that's prompted all this discussion, plus the other things that I read about, plus what I read about that college campuses say they're having, etc. No, that stuff, if it was there, and there probably was some of it, we are not a perfect society, and never were, but there is no comparison to then and what's likely now, or what we're seeing here that in this current situation, and have seen in the other services over the years.
The one more email. Hey, Mac, I served in the Marine Corps in the 80s and the 90s, well before the age of the Internet, and certainly well before the age of the cell phone. I was a support Marine working in the FSSG, and I worked in supply, and there were plenty of females there. I think what General Lynch is saying was certainly true. We were a different culture then, right? The seedy things in our lives were going to strip clubs in either somewhere in Jacksonville or somewhere in San Diego or Oceanside. That's how it was. The craziness ensued really when we went overseas. And then it was normally confined to places like the Philippines and Thailand. And that was the craziness. In my units, although guys hit on female Marines, there was certainly a respect for the authority of our superiors and what the UCMJ would do to us. I don't recall there being the constant harassment that I read about today. I don't know if we were just more intimidated by authority then, which certainly isn't the case now, or that our culture was simply a little bit different then. We, most of us, were churchgoers. We were Christians. Now, does that have something to do with it? I'd like to think so.
He's right.
It certainly is. It certainly is a different culture that we live in today.
It is a different culture, and I can remember. He just reminded me of something. One night, Friday evening, the sergeant major said, "Sir, I'd like you to go to the before it's secure for the day. Can we go down to the enlisted Marines Club? Take a look at its boss's night down there." And when a sergeant major comes to you with something like that, he's got a reason for it.
Right.
And so I said, "Okay, sure, Sergeant, let's go look at this. Let's go down and look at the enlisted Marines Club." I went down there, and there were a large number of staff NCOs and sergeants, and this was boss's night, etc. And I watched it for a while, and I told the sergeant major that you put the word out. Anybody who wants to go to the enlisted Marines Club of a Friday evening, just go there a couple of times, and you'll find yourself that's the only club you rate. Because I won't have it anymore. There was too many of them down there, and they were hanging around too long. And they weren't being offensive to anybody, but you could see, if you're a guy, you could understand what was going on. And that is one time when I did see something that I didn't, in this area that I'd forgotten about. I didn't like it at all. But shut it down. But otherwise, no, different times. They came in with, I think, different attitudes. And in those days, there were no groups of teenagers going around malls picking on old people.
Right. No, you're right. One more email, sir.
Yeah.
Mac, as a female Marine, I will tell you, I think we had the same problems back then. Maybe not to the extent we had now, mm-hmm. because there was no internet. You know, if you were going to do something, you had to do it face to face. Think about that now.
Yeah.
There was no email back then. There were no text messages. If you wanted to ask somebody out on a date, you had to walk up and ask them out mm-hmm. on a date. That intimidated a lot of guys. And so, one, as a female, if you kept to yourself, you could kind of stay away from some of it. Not all of it, but mm-hmm. some of it. Certainly the culture was different. However, I will say this. I think that most female Marines kept that stuff to themselves and were pretty intimidated because there were not too many leaders in the Marine Corps that were female, and it just didn't seem like a good idea to raise any issue if you were being harassed.
Mm.
I think the Marine Corps has changed certainly since then, but I will say this, that my experience was that you were constantly hit on, maybe whistled at, whatever. But because there was no anonymity, I don't think it was to the scale that it is today. The whole cloak of anonymity, the whole being able to do it electronically as opposed to in person, has changed our culture, and I don't think it's changed it for the better, especially relative to female Marines and their service. The cloak of anonymity.
I would agree. Part of the cultural change is this anonymity that comes with electronic communication.
Well, sir, I certainly appreciate your time this morning, and
we stirred it up, Mac.
Well, look, you stir up one anytime you talk about religion, you stir it up. Our migration to a secular nation from a nation that was founded on the ideas of religious freedom, but certainly not being a secular nation, and also the difference us culturally and how that's changed. And so, I think when you look at in when you broaden lens a little bit, I think you see you're able to see this as one more incident in a line of embarrassing incidents, certainly, but done by a very small number of people, and you see it in this fight that the Marine Corps fights in an organization that's 94% male, that's a macho event, and then people want us to be able to go on Oprah's show and be scrub face American boys. I will tell you, 99% of Marines can do that. But there's a group out there that can't. And we pay for it from time to time and so anyway. All right. Well, sir, first of all, I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Mac. I appreciate being with you.
No, and I know some will say like, put them in a museum. Those values, that time is a bygone era. But, and maybe that's true other than the sentiment, relative to putting you in a museum. But, certainly, I think it helps us get our hands around the problem, when we do look at it in a broad, with a broader lens and a little bit longer view relative to history, where we are today.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and we're certainly one more point, Mac. Everywhere I read about this thing going on, there's 30,000, roughly 30,000 members of this outfit. We're not talking about 30,000. That's for damn sure. So somewhere out there, there's hope.
Well, the thing I think is there were 30,000 members. It doesn't say that they were Marines. There were people that wanted to be part of this site. And so we'll find out when the investigation is complete.
Yeah,
it'll be made public. And then, however, the thing that I want to see, and you and I talked about this when we were talking about the incident at Parris Island, until people pay in a very public way, and I mean colonels, sergeant majors, battalion commanders, first sergeants, if those guys don't pay in a public way, then there is no message sent. You can punish staff sergeants and gunnies. In my opinion, that's all bullshit. Until the guy whose job it was to supervise that, to get his ass out there and make sure that he knows, until those people are punished, to me, and so these, whoever is a part of this, they ought to be public, they ought to be punished hard. It ought to be made public, and it ought to hurt, and everybody else should look at it and go, yeah, I'm not going there. And we were talking about this yesterday. And so, you joined the Marine Corps in the 50s. The Marine Corps, when I joined it in the early 80s, I want to say I've been on active duty for a year and a half, maybe 2 years, when the AMAR about DUIs came out. That a DUI would be a double signed fitness report, which essentially ends your career relative to command and being, on the fast track or at least on the best track. And the reaction to that was, what the hell is this? What do you mean the sentries at the gate are going to breathalyze you and write you up? Why aren't they just going to call your wife? Why aren't they going to give you a ride home in the next squad car that's going that direction? What is the Marine Corps coming to? I'm sure you remember that, but the Marine Corps was a hard, physical, fighting, womanizing, drinking place. And the reaction to that was, what the hell is happening to the Marine Corps? So we go through changes as an institution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sir, have a good day.
You do the same, friend. Take care of yourself.
You bet. That is Jarvis Lynch, Major General, United States Marine Corps. Interesting. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to another Lynch, Tim Lynch, son of Jarvis Lynch. And We're going to talk about, Tim is going to be embedded with, I believe it's called Task Force Southwest. The Marines headed back to Helmand. So we'll talk to Tim after a break. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the Battle Mug. You can check it out at battlemug.com. Starts with a block of aluminum. It's milled, machined, and anodized until it's a pretty cool-looking device for you. Designed with operators in mind, Picatinny rails on the side. You can scope, you can camera, you can light. All of that works. Anything you put on a weapon, you can put on the Battle Mug to include emblems and decorating it in case you take it to your office. Check out the full line at battlemug.com. Use the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company made and the product made entirely in the United States. Let me read one more email to you. Hey, Mac. I'm enjoying the show. I think when you broaden the lens, this is another installment in the march of the Marine Corps to be a more accepting place. Whether we agree with it or not is irrelevant. The point is the course has been set. I do think you're correct because I know Marines that are adamantly opposed to females in combat arms, but they no longer even express that opinion. The Commandant has defined the direction. Our job is to make it work to the greatest that we can make it work. And we'll do that. However, we have the same problems that our society faces. Young people come to us and our values are raising the bar for them. Hold on, let me read this right. Our values are raising the bar for their values. Ours tend to be higher. Our tends to be more selfless. It's not something most of them know. And in terms of their peers engage in this kind of behavior all the time. So why shouldn't they? So the education progress is not easy, but I don't see the hysteria that surrounds this issue. Is it embarrassing? Yes. Do we have a ways to go relative to female Marines? Yes. It's the same issue in our society, though. And as you said, and the organization is 94% male. It is a macho place. No doubt about it. We do sensitivity training. We do sexual assault training. We do every kind of training you can imagine to sensitize Marines to these issues. They know the rules. So I do agree with one thing that was said more than anything else, and that is we've done the training. Now punish people. When they cross the line, punish them and make it hurt. And I think if you do that, that sends the message. Enjoy the program. Enjoy it here in General Lynch. Made me think about values and us becoming a secular nation, which, to be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.